Moving on to the second half of the show. 12:02, Willie Donick and Derek Mason here with you on Chase, Willie, and D-Mace. The suit has the day off today. A lot of suit duties, but the show rolls. Still getting it done. And it's time to talk to Jonathan Hutton, sponsored by Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars. Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars is the go-to spot in Nashville for the best old-fashioned, a nice relaxing cigar, and lots of high-end spirits and wine. Jonathan Hutton, brought to you by Blend Bar with David Cigars. Visit Blend Bar in the heart of downtown Nashville today. Blend Bar with Davidoff Cigars, luxury redefined. Hutt, what's going on?
Gentlemen, good afternoon. I nearly said good morning. Willie, thank you for telling me it was 12:02.
Yep, we just got to the PM. I'll tell you what, Hutt, it's been there's been plenty to delve into here. We have gone backwards and forwards on it, so we're looking forward to your fresh perspective here. But before we get into the Titans, let me just ask you one quick one about Tennessee here, because you know they should take care of business this weekend. But yeah, based on how they won the game against Pittsburgh, it was a wildly entertaining game. It could have gone either way. So many big events that kept twisting and turning it. But what do you like after 2 weeks?
Well, I like the fact that when Hendon Hooker's not at his best, he's still not turning the football over. You know, that's number one. He was very efficient in that area last year, and you know, I didn't think he was very efficient top to bottom this past weekend against Pitt, but at the same time, they did not give the football to or any extra possessions to Pitt in that game like they did a year ago. So I am impressed by that, because you look across college football and look at some of the turnovers and these offenses. I mean, compare Hendon Hooker to Anthony Richardson last Saturday with Kentucky's defense. I like the leadership qualities of what he's bringing, despite not playing at his best. And you mentioned it right there, Willie. They won a game where they probably would have lost a game like that a year ago. Tight, close quarters. I think they won one close game last year, and Pitt was one of the losses. So I think even when they're not at their best, they're still pretty good, because they believe in what they're doing, the system and the coaching. Now they've got to get something in the run game. I think they can work on that this week. And defensively, they're pretty slow. I mean, and that may be an understatement. They have to mask that, I think, by just bringing the horses and taking a hypo offensive approach to the defensive side of the football and just going all out to get to the quarterback.
Yeah, it's setting up to be a pretty entertaining season, because I'm with you. Winning the close games, we've talked so much about the Titans and their ability to win close games up until Sunday. And it does – Scott Frost just got fired because they lost so many close games. If they win half of them, he might still at least be the coach. But there's so many games that Tennessee's going to play, at least on paper, in the coming weeks, that on paper could go either way. You got to find a way to do those little things, find ways to win.
Well, and now, you know, the magnitude – this is really the first time – I don't know if you'll agree. I feel like it's the first time since 2016, if I'm going back, where the Tennessee-Florida game means something to both teams, where Tennessee's not coming in with a loss, and they can really jump Florida and really put Florida to rest after losing to Kentucky and then hypothetically Tennessee. And then it's really a three-team race for the East to get to Atlanta, and you still have Kentucky and Georgia ahead. And meanwhile, Florida stays in the hunt and is thoroughly right there square in the mix with a win over Tennessee in the East. So it's very interesting, because I think the roles and the descriptions of the two teams going into this year's matchup is different. It's flip-flopped, and that makes it more entertaining. I can't wait for – I mean, they're already talking about Florida and Knoxville and across the state with some other visits I've been on, and rightfully so. I can't wait for that game. It's going to be juiced and jam-packed. And I think juice is a good word, because I think that game gives Tennessee juice for the October stretch that they'll go on.
Well, they're going to be on a big stretch here, as you said, Jonathan, with their win last week. I know they got sort of a cakewalk, as we say, this upcoming week. Yep. But after this week, it kicks off the SEC season for them. So they're going to need to be, you know, on their A game as they go into SEC play. We're talking with Jonathan Hutton. You can catch him on his airwaves, 94.9, The Fan, Starting at 2 p.m., Outkick 360. Now, Jonathan, I know you've talked ad nauseum about this past game with the Giants. But we, you know, we went over the game again today, just some small little particulars. And I found that the Tennessee Titans have chosen to run the ball, at least in this game, more so to Nate Davis in the rookie side than Brewer and Taylor Lewan. And I want to know, is that an indictment on Taylor Lewan and his run blocking, or do you think they believe that the strength of their offensive line is with Nate Davis and Ben Jones and then the rookie?
I would go the opposite way in game number one, and I'm sure that's why you're asking the question. You know, the left side was where we were seeing the holding penalties throughout the game. I don't know if that played a factor in their thinking or not. Mm-hmm. Maybe Henry told them he's more comfortable planting and pushing through on the right. But, I mean, again, I'm just using hypotheticals and throwing out some guesses. It's a great observation, which I don't have the answer to. And, you know, they have to find the answer in the run game first to see anything go offensively. They moved the chains. They didn't move the scoreboard that often in the first half when they had a chance to separate the score. And it starts with Derrick Henry. He's notoriously a slow starter, though, and not just in season. I'm talking week one. He has, over the last 4 week 1 games for Derrick Henry, he has 7 runs of 10 yards or more. That's it. In 4 games. 4 week 1s. So they've got to pick up the pace there, and I don't know if you guys would point to the lack of preseason games with that or whatever, but this is a recurring theme that I'm sure they knew going into it, and we normally see him get 25-plus, and I think he got, what, 21? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it's too early to read into what side of the line they're running to, and I'm sure also some of that is dictated based on whatever they thought Wink Martindale was going to do on the opposite side. So I would chalk it up to let's sit back and wait and see what happens with the run game and where we see the tendencies. Because if you're picking up on that, you're going a layer or two deeper, which I appreciate, because the surface level tells us it's 1st and 10, they're handing off. That's what Todd Downing does.
Exactly.
I want to see a little mix and match with run and pass on 1st down, but right now, their bell cow and their best player is in the backfield.
And that's why, Jonathan, we wanted to wait as we get into the season more, because this just could have been, hey, listen, Wink Martindale, the strength of his defense is to our left, so let's run away from that, and that's where he typically likes to blitz. Maybe that could have been their thinking, but we want to see more as the season progresses. And if they continue to run to that right side, then that will give us a clearer picture of what they think of their offensive line, I believe. Now, what did you think of that last whole series of the game? More importantly, the pass to Phillips, the big gain to Phillips, and then what happened subsequently after that?
So based on Vrabel's description, they wanted to get to a specific point on the field for the kick. And I think based on the pass to Phillips, there was a little hesitation going on from Tannehill because he knew he got around that mark where I'm sure they told him, hey, this is our line to gain. This is our yard marker. Get there. We're going to get the kick. One timeout left and trying to figure out when to use it and how to get set up. And Vrabel said postgame that the way that they managed that clock at that point was due to the fact that he didn't want to go quarterback sneak or get to a certain hash without spiking it because of a football getting knocked loose or getting kicked around, trying to get it back to the ref, trying to laying on the pile. He wanted nothing to do with that, and he felt like, you know, but Randy Bullock, who had been very good in the preseason and ended the season last year strong, kicking a 45-yarder. Well, after the spike, it's a 47-yard kick. It's from the right hash. It's what Bullock wanted. And he missed it. And it's crazy how the tenor and the mindset changes on one kick, where we have dissected, and I'm all for it, by the way. We've dissected everything to do with that game. And if they make that kick, it's a different outlook on what they overcame and how they got past a tight week one, and we chalk it up to it's a week one performance, and they're off and running. And now it's, man, they've got to avoid 0-2. I don't view it, though, the same way as I view, like, Monday Night Football with what we saw Denver do. Like, it's way different because in this day and age, Randy Bullock should step up and make a kick from 47. So I'm not I'm all for getting closer, but I'm also not thinking that 47 is any big deal if the kicker says that he's comfortable with the win and all the factors going that direction. I would lean with the kicker, hit it through the uprights, and go home. But hats off to Daboll, though, man. Going for two. You know, he had a bit of a Vrabel mindset whenever Vrabel was a first-time head coach, where he's trying to put the game away as quickly as possible instead of waiting for another scenario to play out. He's going for the win as early in the process. And I don't blame him. They had nothing to lose. That's a great spark for them. It's probably something that the Giants coaching staff prior to him would not have done. And so I'm sure the locker room absolutely loved it. And meanwhile, the Titans, I felt like, got beat by a team that played a better brand of Titans football than they did last weekend. The Giants were better at it, with the run game, stopping the run, the whole thing. And both teams were, for the most part, one-dimensional.
When we come back, we'll look ahead to the Bills. We'll get Jonathan Hutton's take on Buffalo, the matchup. Remember last year, that classic that they played? What can they take from that? A lot more coming with Jonathan Hutton from OutKick when we come back here on 102.5 The Game. .12:18 is our time. Segment number two with Jonathan Hutton from OutKick 360. You can hear their show starting at 2 o'clock over on 94.9 The Fan. He joins us each Wednesday at noon. And, of course, he is brought to you by Davidoff Cigars and Blend Bar. So Jonathan Hutton continues on. And, Hutpa, as we look ahead here, first of all, before we look at Buffalo, I want to get your take on the Colts and the Texans. That was, and really, if you want to throw in a thought on the Jaguars as well, the Jaguars' inability to beat Washington, I thought, was kind of a bummer for them. Like, they had a chance. They did a good job of working their way back into that game, came up short, so they're 0-1. And, of course, somehow the Colts tie the Texans. And that was a really bizarre game. But give me your thoughts, because the Titans, not to say that they got a mulligan here, but they caught a break in that the Colts failed to be able to beat a team that they're supposed to beat.
Yeah, and we've discussed a lot this week, Willie, about an 0-2 start and what it means for any team trying to make the playoffs. But with the 7th seed, and I'm not trying to make it sound easy, with the 7th seed and then the AFC South, where I think you can start 0-2 and still win the division this year. I don't think it's as big of a hill to climb as it normally is, given the circumstances. So I'm with you on that. Jacksonville is better. I'm not sure if that means they're actually knocking off some teams along the way that they're not supposed to, or if they're just they're better, whereas they like have the 8th pick in the draft instead of the top pick in the draft again. That would be a gradual improvement for Doug Peterson and what they're doing. I thought, just watching briefly of Jacksonville, then I'll get to Indy. Jacksonville struggled early offensively, and then Trevor Lawrence came to life. James Robinson came to life with a rushing touchdown and a receiving touchdown. They had a really nice drive. It was either before the half or right after the half to Robinson that capped it off to get back in that game. And then give Washington credit, give Carson Wentz credit. They drove down and got a score to Jahan Dotson. One of his two touchdowns came with a minute and a half to go, and Washington came back and won that game after holding a lead. And that was the same thing for Houston. Indy had no business winning that game in overtime. I mean, they could have easily with a kick, but even getting a tie in some ways is a victory for what I saw in that first half from them. They were sluggish. They were slow out of the gate. Matt Ryan's dropping snaps. The ball's on the turf behind the line of scrimmage. It's just, it looked really bad. It looked like your typical Colts team in week one. And instead of a loss, they leave with a tie. And that's ultimately what got Pittsburgh in last year as a 7th seed. Indy lost back-to-back games to the Raiders and then the Jags. And because the Steelers tied with the Lions, they had the tiebreaker with the record, and they ultimately got in over Indies. Kind of a crazy scenario, but I mean the tie does come back to factor in. And Davis Mills also impressed me. His numbers, he's not getting talked about a lot this week, but he looked pretty good for that second year guy out of Stanford for Houston in the third round. So I was impressed by him more than anything, and I think the Colts I don't look at them as any better than the Titans, despite what the national media wants to point to.
Yeah, and the Texans, to their credit, they don't look like a hapless, easy out.
No.
So they could be a little bit tougher, especially if Mills continues to play this way.
And they have two. They have, so I don't know why they didn't use Pierce after talking him up. The rookie running back. I don't know. They didn't use him very, very much. They went with Burkhead, which I know McClain was really upset about. But their two defensive backs, Stingley and Petrie, they were great in this game, and they feel a lot like the Titans do in terms of getting some mileage out of their young rookie class. Houston absolutely had to have it, and I think the Titans are doing it as well, especially on offense out of necessity in the receiving corps.
Indianapolis at Jacksonville, which has been a house of horrors for the Colts over the last few years. Very interesting to have that meeting this coming Sunday. So let's turn our attention to Buffalo, Jonathan. I would say that the challenge for the Titans is not only that Buffalo is an elite team and way, way better than the Giants on paper, but especially defensively, a much different kind of scheme than what they saw with Wink Martindale and the Giants. So it's a really different, unique challenge for the Titans offense.
Yeah, and they bolstered their run defense last year, and this year they've brought in Von Miller. We saw his impact. Everywhere he goes, he impacts the defense. Their pass rush looked much better in week one against the Rams than what we saw last year at times. So, yeah, they've got a very good safety tandem. They drafted Kair Elam to play corner. Tre'Davious White's banged up. And instead, they're starting, I believe, a sixth-round pick. I forget what college he's out of, but he's kind of like a Kevin Byard for them, where he has all these measurables, but he was not invited to the combine. And they're starting him defensively. So I think that's one area I would go at. And I'm not saying he's a bad player at all, but if he ran a bit faster, I'm sure he's a high draft pick and goes to the combine. That's my guess. So I would look at that area as one to go at. The problem is I don't know if that's Burks, if that's Woods. I don't know how you attack him with the personnel that they're using, with the kind of style of offense they're going after. So I'm interested. You mentioned the different scheme defensively, Willie. I'm interested to see if we see some different sets and personnel packages this week compared to what we saw against the Giants out of Todd Downing.
Now, Jonathan, after everyone saw the Thursday night game with Buffalo and how dominant they were, us here locally, we saw how difficult it was for the Tennessee Titans, and ultimately they end up losing the game. Which one you believe is true, or which one you believe is more in line with you know, the narrative? Is Buffalo that good, or are the Titans a team that not as good as they were last year, and potentially a team that won't make the playoffs?
No, I do think Buffalo is that good. Mm-hmm. So let me put in perspective. Buffalo's turning this into a trend. They have not, D-Mace, they have not punted in three of their last four regular season games. Think about that.
Yeah, that's unheard of.
Regular season games, so that doesn't even count. Didn't they play a perfect game against the Patriots in the playoffs? That was a perfect game, right? The Bills? They scored every possession, right?
I'm going back. You may be right. And they may have punted or kneeled down, or I don't know what they did at the end. But yeah, Willie, you have a photographic memory when it comes to sports and knowledge and the dates here. So I'm going by Bill's PR tweeted this out on Sunday or Monday. It's a record going back to when they've actually kept punts in the NFL in like the 1930s. They have not punted in three of their last four regular season games. So
good grief.
That's unheard of.
Well, we know whether they punted once or not. Like they had an unreal performance against the Patriots. It was lights out, and that was a lot of fun for their fans. And then, of course, even though they lost to the Chiefs, they scored a few touchdowns in that game. I mean, nobody was stopping anybody in that game either.
Well, I think the way that you can't – so I take that to mean, like, if the Titans are going to go to Buffalo and win, they can't punt that often. And when they do, Stonehouse has to pin them back. So I think in a weird way, this is where we find out if they made the right call at punter. And I know that's bizarre to say in leading up to a game against the Bills, but they have to make everything difficult on Josh Allen in this offense. They have to make him go the distance. Eat up. If they're going to score, eat clock while you're doing it.
Now,
I think that's critical because that's more of the Titans style right now offensively.
Now, they had troubles, obviously, with stopping the run. Saquon Barkley had over 160 yards. Do you think that was just a one-off, or are you concerned about this run defense?
I'm not hitting the panic button on the run defense. They were good at that last year. I don't view that as an issue that's glaring to me. I was surprised by it. I mean, it's one of those deals where you're not expecting. If you said, hey, the one way to beat the Titans, if you're a Giants fan, is Saquon's got to go off. He's going to rush for 150. I mean, I'm thinking, yeah, he's probably not getting that, you know. But the Titans are going to have to turn it over a few times and all this and that. It was 238 yards total. That's the fourth most. That's only happened four times with the Titans here in town, that the defense has allowed that many rushing yards. So not just with this defense, we haven't seen that combined in a while. So I think that's against the grain a bit, and I'm not foreseeing that being a big issue with this defense moving forward. Maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I'm overlooking it. But I mean, going into this week, I don't look at it as much as a Bills rushing attack as much as I do just corralling Josh Allen, who is their rushing attack in many ways. So I think we're not going to see the same type of game plan against this Titans defense just because they gave up 150 to Saquon. I don't think they turn around and hand off 20 times in this game to the same back because of that.
Yep, it's a totally different formula for sure. Hutt, we're looking forward to it. Thanks a lot for your insights as always. We'll talk to you again next week. Enjoy your show this afternoon.
Yep, thank you guys. Always enjoy this.
Absolutely.
All right, Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360, joining us as he does every Wednesday at noon. A lot to unpack there about the Bills, everything else. Stay tuned. We've got a lot more coming. We're going to actually go to Buffalo, get some perspective from up there during the 1 o'clock hour. This is Chase, Willie, and D-Mace on 102.5 The Game. Hey, everybody, it's time to make sure you get in the groove with our Silly Underdog Contest. It is back. Play them today. Three football underdog teams you think will win outright this week for a chance to win great prizes. Play now at thegamenashville.com or the 102.5 The Game app. Silly Underdog Picks is presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket and Superbook Sports, voted number one sportsbook in Vegas. Download their app today. So, the Superbook actually will provide the official lines for our online on-air contest, of which D. Mace is 2-0. D. Mace looking good in the contest, but the problem is forever Titan Chris Sanders got one of his patented big ones the other day.
Goodness, I'm almost inclined to take a flyer this week too. I don't know. I'm going to think about it.
You got to stick with your game. Your game is working.
Like, my game is to move methodically down the field.
See, Sanders, he may not win another game for 2 months. But if he hits another one in 2 months, he's still going to have a lot of points. He's going to be right there
Absolutely.
With you guys. But we have some fun with that. That's going to be tomorrow at noon, every Thursday at noon. George Plaster is back with us now. Chase will make his pick. We've got D-Mace. We've got Chris Sanders. And, of course, the one and only Kelly Holcomb will be joining us as well. Just a quick baseball update before we get back to our football talk. A little change of pace here with you. The Braves-Mets race continues to heat up. The Mets have lost twice in a row at home to the Cubs. And so the Mets lead is down to a half a game over the Braves, who won last night in San Francisco after snapping a three-game losing streak. The Braves actually lost three games in a row. That's a story in and of itself. They seem to never lose. So the Mets, with a half-game lead, they've got David Peterson tonight against Drew Smyly, trying to salvage the last game of the series against the lowly Cubs. Meanwhile, the Braves have an afternoon game today out in San Francisco, and it'll be the veteran Charlie Morton going against Carlos Rodon, who is probably the best player, best pitcher that the Giants have. So a little baseball update there for you. And it's going to be a race right down to the wire. Remember, three games going on in Atlanta on the final weekend of the regular season. Each team would have one series right after that. So towards the end of this month, it is going to be some great drama, Braves and the Mets. So a couple of things, Derek, that we got from our conversation with Jonathan Hutton. He says, and look, I don't mind this take at all. Kickers in the NFL should be hitting about 83% of the kicks. And it's interesting that Randy Bullock last year hit exactly 83%. He made most of the big kicks. So many Titans games came down to a kick. The Titans kicker job the last few years has been a tough job. You got to make big kicks. It's not like you're playing on a juggernaut that blows everybody out. You got to make kicks. So he's got a pretty decent degree of difficulty. He missed from 47. You and I have been really trying to figure out what could have happened, how much easier they could have made his job for that last kick on Sunday. When they got the great pass to Phillips, they had 18 seconds and a timeout. They dawdled along, didn't get a play in on time, had to burn a timeout, and then move back 3 yards to get the ball on the right hash. So Jonathan Hutton was like, look, let's simplify this. He's got to make a 47-yard kick. I believe that that's fine, but every yard matters, and I think it's your responsibility as a team to help your kicker out. Every yard you move in, to me, increases your percentage that he makes that kick. So I think I place a lot of the blame on them ending up wasting a timeout and having to move back 3 yards. Mm-hmm. And I think that might have been the difference in the game. But where do you put the responsibility there?
Well, the responsibility ultimately lies on the kicker. Bullock has to make that kick. Just like, you know, Taylor Lewan has to step down instead of stepping out. Just like, you know, Fulton have to, you know, keep his eyes on a receiver and not look in the backfield. This is what you are getting paid for. This is why you are a starter on this team because, you know, they feel as if put in these situations, you're going to do your job. I understand the kicker's job is just not him kicking the ball through the uprights. It's to hold, it's to block it in front. But to me, everything was perfect. There was no wind, at least not a lot to affect the kick. The offensive line did a good job at blocking. The snap was perfect. If all three of those phases are perfect, you need to do your job, Bullock, and kick it through the uprights. You are the only time you get an opportunity to affect a play is when you are out there on that one play. Just that one. The rest of the time, you are on the sideline while the offense is methodically moving down the field. The offense has the hard job at putting you in a position to then kick the field goal. Your job, which is for a kicker, for me it would be hard because I'm not a kicker.
Right.
But for a kicker, that's your job. That's the easy part. Put me in a position. There's no other variables. Everything's good. Put me in a spot, and I'm going to kick it through the uprights. He didn't do that, so he let his team down. So to me, everything lies on Randy Bullock not executing again. It goes back to execution, not executing the play the way it's supposed to be executed. Everyone else did, except you as the kicker, just like Fulton, just like Taylor Lewan, just like Bud Dupree. If you execute the play the way it's supposed to be, everybody, then it works.
Right. And you're making a good point. The hold was perfect. The snap, the conditions were perfect. Mm-hmm. It's not like it was a muddy field or windy day. So
now you can
maybe 83% overall. But remember, okay, so I'm trying to assess. Mm-hmm. 47 yards is not a chip shot, right? Mm-hmm. Now, with each passing decade, kickers make a higher percentage of those. Like when we were kids, if a guy hit from 47, that was like, really good. Hey, like, man, 47. And it was more like maybe 5 or 6 out of 10 from 47. Now it's like you got to hit at least 7 or 8 out of 10 from 47, especially with good conditions. But let's just say it's between 7 and 8. Mm-hmm. You're going to hit 7 or 8 out of 10 from 47 yards. If you can get that ball 5 yards ahead and it's 42, then I think you're thinking – it's at least 8 out of 10. It's between 8 and 9 out of 10.
Well,
so that's why I think every yard counts. Like 47, like if he missed it from 35 or 38 or even 40, then I think it's I'm putting a lot more of it. Hey, man, come on. You got to make that. 47, I'm giving the kicker a little bit of slack.
Well, I understand.
Especially when they had an opportunity to move it in a little further.
I understand what you're saying. You're saying, listen, if you have an opportunity to move it forward or keep it status quo right where is that, then do that. And then, you know, it goes from kicking a 47 yarder to now you're kicking a 44 yarder or 43 yarder.
It would have been 44 had they not done anything.
And, you know, the percentages go up when you move closer to the goalpost. So, but I still believe that Randy Bullock is a good kicker, and 47 yards is completely not out of his range. Now, what I do question is, why did you feel the need to go backwards, you know, that far back to make it an even further kick?
Yeah.
Why didn't you just quarterback sneak it up and over instead of going back
three
and
yards.
Over?
Yeah.
Yes, tell the offensive line, come off the ball. As if we're running it, get a hat on the hat, be physical, and we're going up to the side, not to the side and back. I don't understand.
I was really mystified.
Why didn't they do
that?
Because it's still the same premise. We're still going to get on the ball. We're still going to spike it. Quarterback still has the ball in his hand. So, to me, that should be the question. Why did you choose to go back instead of either going down the line or going forward?
Yeah. I was surprised at that, and we didn't get a lot of detail from Coach Vrabel on it. I know they wanted to put the ball on that hash, but there are different ways to do that, right?
Exactly.
If you could go forward and still to the right and not lose 3 yards, I would think that that's valuable. Or, as you said, you could run a quick hitch possibly, right? Let's say even in theory, first of all, they burn the timeout. If you had the timeout in your pocket, that gives you a chance to do all kinds of plays.
But in that situation,
and end up on the right hash.
Yeah.
But a hitch to the outside, you catch it, go out of bounds. The ball is put on the right hash, right?
Yeah,
and if it's incomplete, worst case scenario, it's incomplete, you throw it away. Then there's 14 seconds. You could try it again, right? You could throw the same thing.
Yeah. I would have, you know, one of the plays would have been, okay, let's run a quick out to the right. If the guy's off, throw it quick, get your head around, throw it quick, get out of bounds. If the guy comes up, throw it out of bounds. We're still at the same yardage. If you throw it out of bounds, that's just like spiking a ball. So, you know, I don't think you lose in a situation like that unless somebody blows through the line, and that's what they didn't want to happen. And somebody just eventually blows through the line and you can't get it off. But to me, I just think, you know, in that situation, 47 yards, 43, 47, 45, Bullock, that's your job. Kick the ball through the upright, you win the game.
Would have made it a lot simpler for sure. Stay tuned. We're coming back to wrap up hour number 3. Don't forget, during hour number 4, during the 1 o'clock hour, we go to Buffalo. We'll also have our daily trivia question as well. Stay tuned. We're coming back. Hey, don't forget, you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. Chase Willie and D. Mace here on 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason. I want to take another thing from our conversation with Jonathan Hutton that I thought was interesting. And I hadn't thought about it until he mentioned it, but you've got a Titans defense that just is not feeling good about how they defended the run. Saquon Barkley had the two enormous runs, the big home runs, and you know they ran the ball reasonably well aside from that in the game. Mike Vrabel was ticked. You could tell that really bugged him. That's just not Titans defense because they did a lot of other things that were pretty good. They got a good rush on the quarterback. They made a couple of plays, got the interception. They got the sack fumble. But Hutt mentioned this. The Bills, by trade, are really not a running team.
No.
So it's interesting that you're facing something completely different, not just a better team, but a different scheme where really their best runner is Josh Allen. They just don't turn and hand the ball off a whole lot. And, of course, it's been working really well. The Bills have put up incredible offensive numbers going back to the end of last year and during the playoffs, and, of course, very impressive in front of everybody on opening night. So what do you do? Like, if you're Shane Bowen, you're sitting there going, we got to fix the running game, but, hey, we're playing a team that really doesn't run that much.
Well, you still got to fix the running game. I mean, just because the Buffalo Bills aren't this traditional run team, you still have to make sure, because their quarterback loves to run. So you want to make sure that everyone's fitting their gaps, everyone is being eye disciplined, everyone is playing their techniques, because this defensive line, if they're doing exactly what they're supposed to do, they're dominant. You're not going to run. You're not going to have a Saquon Barkley type of running game against them. That's if they're playing their proper technique, they're being eye disciplined, and they're doing, they're playing within a framework of the defense. So if they're doing that, it's hard to run against them. Now, if they get outside of that, it's a different story. But the Buffalo Bills, again, they're not this traditional, we got a back in the backfield or back in a fullback, and we're going to, 26 power, 27 power.
Yeah.
That's just not them. What did they run the ball? I think Allen had 10 carries.
He had the most runs and the most yards.
Exactly. So if your quarterback is leading the team which you are playing in rushes and yardage, then this tells me this is not a run team. This is not Lamar Jackson, where Lamar runs, but they are a running team because they give it to their backs just as many times. No, Buffalo, they ride on the back of Josh Allen via the pass and the run. So even though I don't believe the Titans will have another one of those, days that they had last week, they still have to account for Josh Allen's ability to run the football. So I think they got back in the meeting room. They saw where they were bad at, the areas they were bad at in regards to the run. And Vrabel's not having that again. That's why it would be, even if this was a run-based team, say Indianapolis, I would be surprised if they gave up 200 yards again rushing.
Boy, I hope not. But, and on the flip side, too, I was curious about Buffalo running the ball because they do have a different offensive coordinator. The guy that left is the guy that we just saw on Sunday, Brian Daboll. So they do have a different guy calling the plays, et cetera. So I thought, especially in a game where they were winning, where, that's usually where you start to see more rushing attempts, right? Mm-hmm. When you're leading a game like they were against the Rams.
But that's not who they are.
That's not who. So they didn't change their identity. Now you're looking at the stats from the Giants game against the Titans going, man, Barkley gassed him a few times. Should we run it a few more times? I do wonder if that thought is in there. But something tells me they're just going to do what they do because it's worked so well. I just don't think they're going to change that much.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to deviate from who they are as a team. Josh threw the ball 31 times. He averaged, 9.6 per you know, per reception, you know, that's how many, you know, when he threw the ball, it went 9.6 yards down the field. That's how many yards they average. So three touchdowns, two interceptions, and I don't blame those, you know, two interceptions on him. So he almost played a flawless game in regards to throwing the football. They were efficient. They were fast. They were physical. They knew exactly what they were doing from a pass standpoint. That's where I'm concerned with the Tennessee Titans. And I've said this many times, this defense from a secondary standpoint, other than, Byard and Amani Hooker, those corners are young. Inexperienced. I know Fulton was there last year, but he's still an inexperienced corner. And then you got McQuarrie and you have Farley and whoever else they choose to throw out there. Corner, they just don't have enough experience at the corner position where they can give up 161 yards and then expect to play really well in the secondary. No, a lot of what this team does is starts with the defensive line first, and the corners and safety benefit from that because it's so difficult to rush the football. So, you know, that lends to the Titans being a little bit better in the secondary. So it's going to be a huge task, a daunting one for the Tennessee Titans secondary. But if the defensive line plays the way they did in the first half against the Giants, if they play that way this Monday night, then I don't think you will see the sort of perfection or the surgical perfection that you saw from Josh Allen versus the Rams. I don't think you will see that versus the Titans if they play the way they are able to play up front.
Have to find a way to disrupt Josh Allen and that crew to have a shot. And nobody's been able to do it here going back to the last part of last year and, of course, in week one. But it's early. We'll see what happens. We go to Buffalo at 1:15 and get more perspective from up there on the Bills. Hey, you're listening to Chase Willie and D-Mace live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio here in Nashville. Don't forget, over on our sister station, 94.9 The Fan, you can tune in for Nashville Sounds Baseball tonight at 7:05. The Sounds are at home at First Horizon Park, going out to the park. Always a great play. The weather has been beautiful lately. They're taking on the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp, AAA affiliate of the Miami Marlins. You laughing at the Jumbo Shrimp?
Yeah, the Jumbo Shrimp.
Come on, man.
I hate Jumbo,
the Jumbo Shrimp. It's really menacing when you have a big Jumbo Shrimp on your uniform, right? It's like,
yeah,
intimidating.
It is. It's
really
very
intimidating. The Sounds are trying to get into the playoffs, though. They've had a great run this year. We'll see if they can do it. And look, the Brewers are still in the race as well, trying to sneak in their affiliate. So go on out there. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by 312 Pizza and Farm Bureau Health Plan. Stay tuned. We're coming back with our 1 o'clock hour. We've got trivia during the one, and we go to Buffalo. Stay tuned.